Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
Now, my next guest this morning has just celebrated his 60th birthday. Described as the greatest musical find of the 90s by the London Independent, he's, of course, the legendary Sean Kane. I'm going to be chatting to Sean soon, but first he's going to perform for us a track from his new album he's currently working on. Accompanied this morning by Stephen Doherty on keyboards and by Fergus Feely on mando cello, this is You Are Loved. Sean, that's a beautiful song. What made you choose it for your new album?
It's a song that was sent to me by a friend from California about 6 months ago. And it's a song that just resonated with me at the very minute I heard it. I thought it's one of those songs that I have to sing. And I have problems choosing songs, because I always maintain that a song has to hit you in a certain place, in the solar plexus, in the soul, in the heart, where the music hits you. in order for it to be any, to get satisfaction from singing it and playing it. And I think in hope of other people receiving the same kind of energy from the song, it's important that it does get me in that way, and then I can pass on that in my own performances. And that's what I try to do. But it takes me a long time to choose songs. They really have to hit me deep in order for me to sing them. If somebody said, here's a song, Sean, it will be number one hit all over the world tomorrow. If I didn't like it, it would be a waste of time. I couldn't do it. It's just I could not do it. I'd probably forget the words straight away anyway, and the melody. So it's not something that that comes easy, as I say. So I troll through a lot of songs. But I have a good few friends that put songs my way. And that one was, I'm definitely thankful for that one.
Were you always like that?
Always like that, yeah. Even to going back to the days when I was singing only the old unaccompanied traditional songs. There were always songs that I resonated with me. Are there songs that I could get lost in the story? I suppose as a child growing up singing the old traditional songs, a lot of the songs would be about troubled times, about immigration, about famine, and a lot of hardship in it. Now, to a child of 6 or 7 learning songs, it's hard enough to get your head around those kind of songs. But I did manage to pick out songs like May Morning Dew or Storm McCree or other songs like that that I've been singing all my life since I was 6 or 7 years of age, and I can still get lost in the story. I get off on a different trip each time I sing it, which is a nice thing.
Now, you've been working on your new album. Was that good to be able to do that during lockdown? Did it give you a focus?
Well, I didn't actually do any work on it during the lockdown because I don't have the studio. I'm not working the studio. I have at home myself. So I have to travel for it. So all travels was restricted. So I couldn't go, and I couldn't meet with the lads to rehearse or to go through songs. So we were doing little bits and pieces online and back and forth. But there's nothing like getting in with the lads and just sitting down and playing a few tunes and singing a few songs. And hopefully as time goes by, even in front of an audience. So, you know.
You had a big birthday, your 60th. How did you celebrate it? Could you celebrate it?
Yeah, I had a couple of pints in the local, which is very nice. And a big shout out to Stuart and Barbara and Queely's. Yeah, it's generally my birthdays all through my life have been kind of low key. I keep forgetting them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There was never much attention paid to my birthdays, or I never paid a lot of attention to them. And this year is kind of the same, although I suppose it's a significant year. I never thought I'd get this far, so I should celebrate it. But yeah, it was low key enough.
You mentioned there you're local. You've gone back to live pretty much, haven't you, Sean, where you grew up?
I have indeed, in the fields that I played in as a child and looked after animals and everything else, rural County Galway, up in the, near the Mayo border there. And of course, we'll have to be cheering them on next week. And congratulations to them. What a game. I just, as we mentioned, Mayo. But
where exactly is it?
It's, well, where I live is between Tuam and Hetford. It's a place called Carlos Stran. And there's a fairy hill there that you'll see off in the distance, a place called Knockmah. So at the foot of that is where I was born. I spent my first couple of years of life in that house. But we moved up to further north in the county, up in the parish of Carlos Stran, almost on the Mayo border near Shrule. And I suppose when I got married first, we built a thatched house, was the first house in Tipperary. And then we had reason to change houses 10 times in 22 years for various reasons, financial more than anything. And we ended up building the last house, the one that I'm in now, in Carra, in Carlos Stran, right beside my parents' house, my aunt's house, my grandmother's house. So it's a nice place to be.
Your happy place. Obviously, your childhood must have been very happy, was it?
It was indeed. It was indeed. It was different to, as I'd imagine, being a child today. We had the freedom. You were everyone's child in the village. As they say, the village reared the child. And I got a slap in the look, as they say, from neighbours. And I got sweets from the neighbours. And there was no attention being paid. You had the freedom. Like, you'd wake up in the morning and my mother would say, go on, out the door. I don't want to see you till evening time. So she'd get her wish. We'd disappear, go at devilment and spend our time. Freedom, with the freedom to grow up, which I think was an important thing that I look back and see it as being very precious. Because nowadays, you're all the time in the company of your children. If you even go out for a cycle, you have to go with them. If you go for a walk, you have to go with them. So there's that separation, the learning time, the actual where you make a mistake and you don't have to be told, that there's no wisdom there to say, well, you shouldn't do that or you should do this way or something. You figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the part of growing up that I think maybe nowadays is sadly, is probably lacking a little bit.
I think that's so true. But it was a musical family as well, wasn't it? Right back to your grandparents.
Yeah, all the members of the family, the older generations, my father's and mother's generation of the family, they all played, but including my mother, who was Bridie Comer, and she played fiddle and was a singer. And she taught me most of the songs that I sing today, the older unaccompanied songs and so on. And my father played drums and accordion, and he was a singer. And as I say, all of those, that generation, played the music. So there was always musical instruments left around, and we were always just allowed to pick them up and play them and so on. So I ended up settling on instruments like the flute and the whistle. The Uilleann pipes I play a little bit on. I'm more of an Uilleann pipe owner than a player, but I like to try. I play a tune on the fiddle or the accordion or so on. So they were always left around for us to play. But there was never anything like, oh, go to your room and practice. Or there was never attention like that paid to it. It was just, you absorbed it from the people. I was lucky enough that the house where my grandmother lived, it's an old thatched house, and she was a wonderful collector of songs and tunes, which she was like, I describe her as the Google of the day, because it was like a hub for music. People would come looking for songs, and she would always barter. She'd say, ah, should I give you a song? If you give me a song in return.
Good
so she, yeah, it was yeah. a nice policy, and I'm delighted that she had that policy, because when I was a child singing at the Flack Yoles and the Flack Yole competitions at the that material that she had gathered was a great source. She had an old brown leather suitcase full of handwritten songs, and that was where I would dip into for the material that I needed. It was a great source.
And I know you mentioned the Flack Yole. How old were you? You were very young when you first won your Flack.
I think I was. It was the under 11 competition. I think it was about seven.
What did you sing?
I sang a song called May Morning Dew, and it was a song. How that came about is my mother was reading the local paper, the Tuam Herald, one day, and I was playing it. I remember it was springtime, and my sister Dolores was there in the house. My mother was reading the paper, and she saw an advertisement for the Flack Yole. It was being held locally in Tuam that year. So she read out the article and said, oh, the Flack is in Tuam this year. And then she left down the paper, came up with a bright idea. She said to Dolores, she said, why don't you teach that lad a song? And we'll see, can he sing? And we'll put him into the county Flack Yole in Tuam. So they made a monkey out of me, taught me a song, and put me into the Flack Yole. And I won my competition, and I came away with my medal. And then I was brought to the Connacht Flack Yole, the provincial, and I won that as well. And won the All-Ireland held in Dublin that year. So I was brought to the All-Ireland Flack. And I won my competition here in Dublin. And I thought, well, if singing songs can bring me around to all of those places, I just thought, I'll eat them up. So I did. All through my childhood years and into my teenage years, I just learned songs, travelled to all the Flack Yoles and fishes and sang on them all. And it was wonderful. The people I met back then as a child, we're still friends today. It was even the people we'd sing against and play against. Getting bands together and getting duets and trios together at the back of some hall in some village, some place where they'd be Flack on. That kind of camaraderie. It was a wonderful experience.
Do you still sing that song that you won when you were seven, The Flower?
I do indeed. I do indeed. And it's probably still one of my favourite songs to sing because, as I said earlier, a lot of those songs that the older generations would have been singing, it's hard enough for a younger person to actually relate to them so that you can get lost in the song. But I thought with May Morning Dew, it was just ideal. It spoke of home, it spoke of family, it spoke of grieving. It's so a lot of stuff that I could actually relate to as a child. So it sunk in and resonated with me, and I suppose it's comfortable to sing it right to this day.
Will you sing it now?
Why not? How pleasant in winter to sit by the hob, listening to the birds and the howls of a dog. Or in summer to wander the wide valleys through, and to pluck the wild flowers in the May morning dew. Summer is coming, oh, summer is here, with the leaves on the trees and the skies blue
and clear, and the birds they are singing their fond notes so true, and the flowers they are springing in the morning dew.
That beautiful song, which you won your first plow with, Sean, when you were just seven. How many of you were in your family? How many children?
There are seven. I have three brothers and three sisters, and I'm the youngest of the seven.
Were you spoiled rotten?
No, abused very badly.
And it's you and Dolores. Are you all as musical?
Well, everybody in the family sings and plays. The only two that were crazy enough to attempt to take it on as a career was Dolores and myself. The rest had the wisdom to stay away from it. But, Lord, I'm thankful that I did go at the music business. Never really intentionally wanted to be a musician. I wanted to play music, but not necessarily be a professional musician. And I began playing with bands when I was 17. Maybe 15, 16, here in Ireland. But when I went to London at 17, I began to play with a band called Shi Gui. And it was a great learning curve into an insight into the professionalism of what's required as somebody who decides to make music a profession as opposed to a hobby. And you kind of change the way that you think about music. The business can get in the way, kind of can contaminate the music a little bit. An experience that I kind of had when I went to America with a band called Real Union. We were there for 6 months or 6.5 months. And after that, when I came home, it was just too much of the professionalism, and it stopped me from playing and singing for about a year and a half or maybe 2 years. I just didn't want to play. I didn't want to go and hang out in sessions, which I just thought I could never live without. So I thought, oh, this is what happened. I allowed the kind of professionalism and the touring and all of that business to interfere with the music and how precious it is. So I kind of wiped the slate clean again, and I thought, I'm just going to sing for singing's sake, and the songs I want to sing, play the music I want to sing. I don't care who listens. I'll go out and I'll play it to two people. And that's what I decided to do. And here I am, 35 years later.
And on that note, we're going to take Galway Bay from you now. It's a beautiful song, isn't it? Do you still love singing it?
I do, but it was made famous by my sister Dolores. And we actually recorded it during that tour that I mentioned in America. We recorded it in North Carolina. And I was playing flute in it and doing a little bit of backing vocals, but Dolores took the lead in the vocals in it. Yeah.
You're going to sing that verse now.
Of a poor old man, be with him now. soul of heaven, I ask of God upon my dying day, my soul to soar forevermore above you, Galway
Beautiful song, Sean. Just before you sang that song, you were saying you actually gave up singing and music for a while. You got kind of sick of the whole business of it. Was it meeting your wife, Virginia, that brought you back into music?
Yeah, it was, I suppose. Or at least she made the suggestion that I should record an album. And I said, I met a man out in Inishbofin. Just when Virginia and I were engaged, a man called Artie McGlynn, who was a wonderful, wonderful guitar player, played with Van Morrison, all the greats, just a man that was so influential to me, so helpful to me. His advice, I think, I wouldn't be here really only for Artie McGlynn. And he came to me out in Day's Hotel in Inishbofin, and he says, why don't you record an album? And he says, if you decide to do it, he says, I'd love to produce an album for you. And I came home and I said that to Virginia, and she says, and why don't you? And I said, well, I don't want to really get into the business going with managers and record companies and all of this. And she said, well, sure, you should record it anyway. And I said, I will, if you manage it, if you manage my career. So she says, I'm a school teacher, I know nothing about the music. And I said, neither do I, so let's go at it. So we spent 35 years doing that, she managing my career and so on. So between herself and Artie, I think they were the main people who pushed me again towards the music.
And of course, while your first album was recorded, things didn't work out so well for you then. You got into this difficult contract situation, didn't you?
I did. I actually signed a contract with a record company here in Ireland, and a record company that I had great faith in, really, I suppose, a bit of ignorance as well. I hadn't dealt with record companies before, didn't really spot the pitfalls and so on. And we ended up having to go to court in order to be able to work and so on. And I had to buy myself out of the contract, which hence the reason for the change of houses so many times. We just had to keep ahead of the posse because it cost a lot of money. We had just taken out our first mortgage at 18%. Our first daughter, Marilise, was just born. And I had just given up my job to move to Tipperary. So very unopportune timing. It was upsetting. It was upsetting. And we were at the pin of our collar, and stress levels were high. And again, Virginia, the type of woman she was, she came home one day and she said, do you know what we are doing at the weekend? And I said, no. She said, we're going to Spain for a holiday. I said, what? I said, we can't afford to go to Spain on a holiday. She says, we can. I've it booked and we're going.
And we Great did. Woman.
Absolutely. And yeah. She did exactly the right thing, because I went into an apartment in Spain and I spent about 2 days and two nights just sitting on the veranda, out just sitting there, straightening out the spaghetti in the head and trying to get it figured out. Came back a whole new attitude towards life and a different feeling towards it. So we thought, let's take it on. This is the road ahead, so let's do it. So.
And I've been lucky enough, Sean, to interview you over the years. And I've spoken to you before when Virginia died. And that was a very dark time initially, wasn't it, for you? You kind of felt you couldn't really sing for a long time after.
Well, I just had no interest in singing. Like, she was such a big part of my professional career. You know, she was the one that suggested it. She managed it. She did so much. So when she parted, it was just hard to get the enthusiasm in myself. Because we had worked as a team for so long, it was like missing a limb. So it just took time.
But the lovely thing is, I suppose, everyone's heart recovers and you've met someone new.
I have indeed. I have met a lady called Anne Doohan, and that's a great pleasure. Something, a complete surprise. But there you go. When Virginia, before she parted, she says, oh, you can't be on your own now, and you have to go and get somebody and... I'll go off and I'll get somebody for you. And I said, well, hold on a minute, mind your business. I said, I did all right the first time, I'll do all right the second time. So when I met Anne, I had this kind of discussion in the back of my mind with Virginia. Yes. Is this you or is this me?
It's probably her.
It's probably her. It probably is. It really is a fascinating life. And I think that the beauty of it is the unpredictability of it. It's just you can make all the plans you want in the world, but it's just going to make its own curves and tangents and so on. And all you have to do is hang on and ride it out, as they say.
Do you find that as you get older, you're happier in your life or not?
Well, I never felt myself getting older. That's the biggest surprise I got. It's kind of, I'm 60. I couldn't be 60. In my head, I'm somewhere around the 30s.
I know. We're all like that. It's kind of,
when somebody puts a number, and I think, that's strange. But there you go. It's time is flying away. But yes, I suppose you just get used to dealing with the different things that life crops conjures up for you. And you, like, with experience, you think, well, here's this knock or here's that or this is the way this is going to go. You just have the experience, I think, I hope, of dealing with what presents itself to you during life at a certain age.
Also, gigs, you're going to be able to play some of them live again soon. Is that exciting? Be able to get out in front of a crowd.
Oh, that is great. That is great. It finished so abruptly when the whole pandemic started. It was like we were all caught in mid-air, mid-flight. It's like you stop the TV and pause it. It's kind of there, and there we've been for the last 18 months. Yes, we are doing a couple of gigs. We're in Ballybunion in the Tintown Theatre on the 12th of September. We're doing another gig on the 26th in Drimaleague down in West Cork, and it's in the church down there, which is always a great ambience, and it's a lovely place to sing. And the more the gigs that are happening, the better, because I think we all need them. We need to play, and I think people need to hear music, especially in Ireland. We just we love it for some reason.
We definitely do. Well, thanks so much to you, Sean, and to Fergus and Stephen, who accompanied you today. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to listen to you sing and to hear you chat. Sean Cain, Míle Buíochas, and you're going to sing for us now, Home.
Rising off the wall, the rainbows I keep chasing keep on fading before I find my crawl to hold. And more I'm thinking that the only treasure that I'd ever know are long ago and far behind, wrapped up in my memory. Muddy road between my toes. Home was a back porch swing that I would sit, and Mama sang Amazing Grace while she hung out the clothes. Home was an easy chair with my daddy there, and the smell of Sunday supper on the stove. My mind, I'm always going home. My eyes that lay ahead. It's too late to listen to the words of wisdom that my daddy said. And the straightening of old path he showed me turned into a thousand winding roads. My footsteps carry me away,
my mind I'm always going home. Home was a swimming hole and a fishing pole and a field in the muddy road between my toes. Home was a back porch swing where I would sit and Mama sang Amazing Grace while she hung out the clothes. Home was an easy chair with my daddy there and the smell of Sunday supper on the stove. My footsteps carry me away, but in my mind I'm always going home. And the straightened out old path he showed me down into a thousand winding roads. My footsteps carry me away, but in my mind